It's Border Crossings with Larry London from VOA 1.
Hi, I'm Larry London. Welcome to Border Crossings. They're on tour for a brand new single and celebrating their 30th anniversary together. We'd like to welcome to Washington, D.C. and to our studios, Better Than Ezra. Nice to have you guys.
It's so good to be here, to finally be here, because we fought with publicity and the label to be on the show. You guys have turned a cold shoulder to us, so finally to join you, it feels like an accomplishment.
Well, congratulations on all your success. I mean, having been together for as many years as you have, and you're at work right now in the studio on, I believe, album number 9, if I'm not mistaken.
I think that's it. If you maybe it might be 10 if you include the greatest hits, volume 1.
Yes, it's a lot.
Wow.
It's crazy. When we started our first rehearsal in March of 1988, little did we know that we would still be doing it and doing it at this level and talking with people like you and this tour. We're very grateful.
Well, you know, it's a thrill to have you guys here because I've played your music many, many times over my career on the stations I've worked at. And so to be able to meet you and have you in studio, you guys are a lot of fun. You're a fun band, fun music. You have a great time. Now, I wanted to find out Better Than Ezra, because I've gotten a lot of email from listeners. You know, we mentioned you'd be here. I'm sure the most common question is, who's Ezra and why are you better? And, you know.
Well, we used to tell people the explanation of the name in the early days, and we found that they were a lot less interested in our band when we told them the explanation.
Friends are like, ooh.
Yeah, or just
the Hemingway story, but I don't know.
But so by not telling people, it kind of became our gimmick. And so, you know, there's a few books out there, like origin of band names, like Rolling Stones and Beatles and all that stuff, and they have like a paragraph dedicated to the much bigger bands than us, and then because we don't tell people, we've got like several pages dedicated to, you know, explanations, potential.
Gotten way more mileage out of it by
But the Hemingway, you know, on page 258 of A Movable Feast, anything was better than Ezra learning how to play the bassoon, is the most literate and well thought of.
It's so much better than the actual.
So we're just keeping
keeping it mystery.
Our fear is that if we finally come clean, that people just won't care anymore at all.
Unsubscribe.
Exactly.
Now, you guys met at college many moons ago.
Louisiana State University.
Uh-huh. And decided music was the way to go.
You know, I think we just wanted to play college bars.
We enjoyed it.
Fraternities and sororities. Yeah. And there's such a rich tradition in the southeastern part of the United States, going back to the Stax Volt bands like Sam and Dave and Otis Redding, and then in the mid-80s, REM and B-52s, of grinding out on that southeastern college circuit. Mm-hmm. And you could be an unsigned band, get in a beat-up van, and tour around Atlanta, Athens, Tuscaloosa, Memphis, Nashville, Jackson, Oxford, Austin.
I mean, and just regional.
Make a living, and that's what we did.
I guess that still goes on.
I guess it does.
I mean, with the internet, I don't know. I don't know that it does as often anymore.
Well, I hope the Ezraites are tuned in today and they're listening and watching, because it's a thrill to have Better Than Ezra here. Would you guys do a song for us?
Let's do it. Let's kind of maybe do this kind of chronological. This is the song since this is kind of an anniversary year for us, which we will talk further about. Let's do Good.
All right.
Let's
do it. Ooh, number one. better than Ezra. And good. 1993. Good. That was number one.
And just like a fine wine, it just gets more robust.
Gets better with time.
Better. Deeper meaning, too.
Yeah,
people
really
are starting to peel back the real meanings of the song. So many layers.
Now, I would guess that that's probably the most played song by you guys. I mean, everywhere you go, you're asked to play that every time.
I think it is. I mean, yeah. Certainly with, you know, with Spotify, and if you can track the streams, it's the highest stream song. It's crazy because the wah-ah, it was was going to be a lyric, but we wrote the song and we had to play it. We were excited to play it, and I just never got around to finishing the lyric, and that became the big hook.
And we would play it live, and friends were immediately like, "What's that song?"
I know,
you know, it's
yeah.
just like it immediately, it like locked in for people.
You and know? So, of course, you know your friends who you grew up with, who that we're all very close with still. We do things together, and they don't cut you any slack. You know, and that's good. You need old friends around you, so they never let you get the big head. So if I do something, I say something lame or a bad joke or trip, you know, or they usually go wah-uh. Yeah, that's how they get.
And you had said in an interview, it took 7 years to get signed.
Yeah, that's right,
and 7 weeks to reach number one.
Yeah, and I don't know if it's because we were in the South and we were just between New York and Los Angeles. It just took us a little longer to get noticed. But certainly we were out there doing it like 5 or 6 nights a week. And then eventually, you know, boom, it hit with people.
They said, labels said no to us so many times that finally they were like, oh, geez, please. Okay, I'll give you a deal.
We weren't going to let it die. We were going to make it happen. And then, and that's sort of really what happened. You know,
where were you when they said you're number one? I mean, do you remember that moment in your careers?
Tom, you
we were on tour. I think we were like in California or something
maybe.
Like that.
Yeah. Yeah. And that was a great moment for us. And it was an album we made ourselves. You know, we made it in an apartment in West Hollywood, California, on half-inch 16-track tape. And if you know anything about audio recording, that's almost hobbyist-level stuff.
Right.
But because we had a great engineer and producer, and the songs were just really good, you know, and well-rehearsed, that they just translated. And if you listen, you put that album next to other albums, sonically, you can hear like, oh, wow, that is super garage rock. But it had a thing.
That's part of the love of it. I think people are into it because they're like, oh, this album brings back so many memories for me. You know, it's just cool.
And I remember when Norm MacDonald referenced it on
Saturday Night
Live.
This summer, the number one band on college campuses is Better Than Ezra. Number two, Ezra. Yeah, people love that.
So you're marking the 30th anniversary now by releasing or re-releasing Deluxe, the album,
yes,
as a vinyl.
Yeah.
Double vinyl. Will come out this August. We're doing it's Pledge Music.
Yep.
And it's interesting. Pledge came out as kind of like almost a GoFundMe thing, and then it got so big that bands like Coldplay and Rolling Stone really paid off for us. We had a lot of bands we used to love to watch that we kind of emulated, and it was, you got to put on a great show. And Elton John famously, you know, has said that you're going to have hit albums. What sustains a long career is a great touring audience, that live show. So that's why we're here. That's why a band like Bare Naked Ladies are like, hey, we want you to go out on tour with us. You know, your numbers, you draw to this day, you draw really well out on the road, and that's really kind of affirming. Because sometimes you question it when you're out there. And you're like, oh, my gosh, it's a rainy night, and you're in Des Moines, and there's not a lot of people out there. But you keep going. You know, we're a testament to not quitting. Like Tom said, you know, we were together 7 years before we got signed, but we just kept doing it. The idea is that hopefully talent and hard work pays off, and we're certainly an example of that.
I think when you're out there on tour and it gets to be like we're on 9 in a row right now, you got to remember that somebody in the audience, you're their favorite band, and they have made an effort to come and see you, and they want to have a good time. You keep that in the back of your mind, and it's just easy to do.
Or they don't like you at all, and you want to change
to
their
win
mind.
Them over. Exactly.
You want to change their mind. You can see them out in the audience. Actually, at the end of shows, we'll come back off and like, "This is a great show," and Jim would be like, "Did you see that one guy in the front row just going?"
I wasn't having any of it.
By the end, he's up. You know,
by the end of the night, yeah. So you guys, I mean, have done a little country music too. I mean, some of your members have left in the past with Sugarland and some other things. So you
he's,
kind of,
yeah.
What lane?
He's
would
out
you,
them right now, actually.
What, and I think Taylor Swift too. Somebody,
yeah. Taylor's recorded a couple of our songs and performed. She's a friend of ours, T. Swift.
So what lane would you say you're happiest and most comfortable in?
You know, our music, we started off an alternative rock band. That was the genre we were put in, and we considered ourselves that. But like most things, what was edgy and dangerous a long time ago becomes mainstream. So yeah. I think we're just a rock band. Mm-hmm. You know, pop leanings, you know, some of our songs. We've always incorporated what we're listening to, you know. And so, look, I've been living in Nashville for the past 7 years. You know, songs like The Great Unknown off the new album have a bit of a country vibe. You know, we get influenced by what we consider just great music, that, and hopefully that gets put through the sieve of Better Than Ezra.
Yeah, that's up. A bit of how you stay relevant, too. You just listen to your contemporaries, and, you know, you don't necessarily emulate it, but you are listening to it, and you're aware of it.
So yeah. We want to be a world music band.
I had a conversation with a friend of mine the other day. We were talking about, you know, it's so hard to not record something that sounds like something else these days because there's been so many songs done. You know, we're talking about the legal battles. Ed Sheeran's now got a $100 million copyright suit and with Marvin Gaye's family.
He's got a few. Right?
Exactly. So when you record something, if you've got a line, a verse, a riff,
exactly.
It's going to sound like something somewhere.
Often as a songwriter, you know, you call it stepping. Mm-hmm. Like, are we stepping on that? And you'll go listen, and you're like, oh, it's the worst. Because the worst is when you're in songwriting session, everyone's fired up, and then finally somebody goes, I think we're stepping on a Taylor Swift song. That happened to me. Shake It Off. And I was like, oh, and you try to save it. You convince yourself for an hour, you know, in vain, and finally you let it go. But sometimes you're right.
You're standing on it, not stepping on it.
Then you're standing on it.
Is anybody taking good? You know?
No, nobody has. But a song I wrote with Howie Day, a song called Collide.
Yes, yes.
A bank appropriated it and had re-recorded it, and they used it in a big nationwide bank commercial. And the publishers went after them, and it was a good day when that was settled.
Yeah, you guys have had a number of songs in commercials.
We have. I think our favorite one was Desperate Housewives with Juicy.
Juicy, yeah.
And then that was also an Applebee's steak commercial. Right. It's funny because there was a time like when we started where syncing or giving your song to be synced up with, you know, an advertisement or a movie was considered uncool. Mm-hmm. And then Moby came along, the electronic artist came along in the 90s and changed that and made so much money that everybody else was like, we'll do it.
Right, we want a piece
of it. But now, bands, you wave that flag because radio is often elusive, especially with a band that's been around. So you look for those commercials that are using your songs, whether it's Desperate Housewives or Applebee's.
We turned down a couple of offers where we're like, what were we thinking?
We turned down offer to play a new product was coming out, a type of potato chip was coming out, and it was a sweepstakes, and the winner got to go see B-52s and Better Than Ezra on the USS Intrepid, and their opening offer to us was $500,000, and we said no.
Oh, of course.
And 2 years later, we called our manager, hey, man, you think you could still get that gig? Right. He was like, no, it's gone, and I'm quitting.
We've got Better Than Ezra in our studios, still together after all these years, still on tour and putting out some new music. We're going to ask if you do another song for us.
Oh, yeah.
That would be great.
We're going to do our new song.
Okay. All right. All right.
And that's usually when people, you know, go get refreshments at a show.
Don't leave now. Don't leave now. Don't turn off the TV or the radio.
This will actually be the first time we've ever done this.
This is the first, televised version of this song. It's called Grateful, and it's about being grateful for the things you have that despite maybe the craziness and the chaos in your life or in the world, kind of finding those rays of hope and those things that to be thankful for. You know, I have a grandfather who often said, you know, I wouldn't trade my problems for anybody else's problems. And that just really resonates. And that's kind of where this song was inspired from.
I love it. Better Than Ezra.
With a silver lining, I wake up to the sound of the whole world crying. You hear it long enough, and your hope starts dying. Got a million things to do, what's the point in trying? But I'm trying anyway. I'm gonna be grateful.
Always gonna be my angel. Everybody keep running till they get to the end of that rainbow. Now there may be no particle, honey, that's okay though. Yeah, that's okay though. I'm gonna be grateful every day. Never gonna stop. Yeah, we keep on shining, shining on. Yeah, we keep on rising. We're never gonna stop. Yeah, we keep on shining, shining, shining.
Multi-platinum
recording. The control room is, the people, you know, they can't see this. Control room is going nuts. Their shirts are in the air.
They're standing around the world.
They're doing cartwheels.
It gets in your blood.
It does. It does. Now, Kevin, are you the songwriter, principal songwriter? Is it collaboration?
I am.
How's it work?
But all these guys are songwriters and creators. And but I, that was a song written with a guy named Mark Scabilia, who's he's, I think he's has a new album out, a young artist who's got a really good following. And we were writing one day, and I was like, wow, I know we're in a songwriting session for you, and you want to record this, but I think I'm going to take this song. And it became a Better Than Ezra song.
So why wait so long for another album? It's been, what, 2014 was the last album, so what's been going on for 4 or 5 years now?
Life.
Life gets in the way, huh?
You know, for the longest time, Better Than Ezra was everything we all did. And then now Better Than Ezra is something we do. And I think that, as you asked earlier, what you attribute to being together for 30 years, we've kind of, you know, we have families and different interests and pursuits, and the songs have to be ready, you know. We're always writing, but some songs are Better Than Ezra songs, and some songs are, you know, maybe a Taylor Swift song or something like that.
By what Kevin said, by not being the only thing makes it a special thing for when we do it, and it just makes it better all the way around. Mm.
So what are the things that you're doing in between?
Well, I mean, we have kids. I got a 10-year-old and a 7-year-old, and that's, you know.
Are the kids
all doing music? As soon as I get off tour, here you go.
Tom's, you know, you're busy producing.
Yeah, I have a studio in New Orleans, and produce sort of regional artists that are trying to take it to that next level, you know, sort of thing.
Do the kids do music? I mean, all your kids?
My daughter's really good vocalist, and she's got some talent. My son, he's 7. He's more interested in turning the knobs on the board, and
like his dad,
yeah. Producer.
I've got 3 boys. One's about to go off to LSU.
Yeah, oh, congratulations.
In Baton Rouge, and then 9-year-old twin boys, and they're kind of into music. They're going to be taking music lessons this fall, but. You know, if I'm not doing Better Than Ezra stuff, it's writing and producing other artists, whether it's a band like called The Struts or Madison Ward and Mama Bear, or a band called Moon Taxi that's doing well right now. I started a music festival a few years ago called Pilgrimage Festival.
Pilgrimage,
you can go to pilgrimagefestival.com. This year we've got Dave Matthews, Chris Stapleton, Lionel Richie.
Hosier.
Wow.
Yeah. It's a great festival.
Yeah, it's a great festival. They've done a really good job on the festival. It's really good.
Very nice.
So it's done really well. Justin Timberlake became a partner in the festival a couple of years ago, so he's no slouch. Mm-hmm. So that keeps me busy. Yeah, and just life, yep. I guess, right? Yeah.
Wow. What's been the highlight? I mean, with 30 years and all the things you guys are doing, could you single out anything other than today and being on the Voice of America?
You took the words.
I knew that was coming.
Oh,
I could see it, Kevin.
You
could see the wheels spinning. So, but beyond that, career highlight.
For me, you know, what would you say?
I would say we were asked to play for our beloved New Orleans Saints.
Super Bowl.
For the Super Bowl when they won. Win or lose, we were going to play.
That was.
We just happened to play.
That was a great moment.
The victory party.
2010, when the Saints went to the Super Bowl and won, the team invited us, flew us down. We rode on the team bus to and from the game with Reggie Bush and Drew Brees. We played us and Kenny Chesney played the victory party. You know, we're there with Coach Payton. You know, with the Lombardi Trophy, champagne spraying everywhere,
and
we're
right there with the team. Hey,
nobody slept that night.
What position does he play? That's what people were asking.
That was such a great moment. But the everyday moments are, you know, like being on this tour and coming out to these beautiful. You know, tonight, you know, we're in D.C. We're at Wolf Trap. It's sold out, and it's maybe 12,000 people out there to see people. That you recognize fans for throughout the years singing those songs and reliving those memories. And then they've got their kids with them, and those kids are singing along. That's such a good vibe. And you realize, wow, I'm doing something that has meant something to people. We're a part of the soundtrack to people's lives. That's the greatest thing. So those are little moments each day for me.
The longevity, sort of all those moments together that we're able to keep doing this.
Yeah, not many fans enjoy can say that.
You know? Yeah.
And like each other.
Yeah, and
at
like
the end
each
of the
other.
And like, genuinely like.
The thing is,
most people, like when we have days off, we call each other up. You guys want to go grab some food? And we're hanging out. It's kind of crazy. There's not a lot of bands that get along. Mm-hmm. You know, that's why so many, in relationships in general, it's tough to make them
last. And so you guys have done a lot of international touring. I mean, it must be fun to be on stage in a country, Japan or something, that doesn't speak English, but they know the words to all your songs.
Music is definitely the international language. And if we're playing to an audience that English isn't their first language, you see it translate, you know, in American music, you know. Mm-hmm. Certainly English-based music is the universal language.
Yeah, it's cool. It's a great feeling. Mm.
And you've been on tour with Bare Naked Lady for years. I mean, this isn't the brand new thing.
I've written with Ed from Bare Naked Ladies for about 10 years and worked on the past three or four albums. And we've done some shows together. But this is our first tour this summer.
Yeah. Oh, this is the first?
We've known them a long time.
I think that we're going to be doing more.
Hmm. Yeah. I mean, we did many festivals together over the years.
Right,
right. Because they were having hits around the same time as we were, so it just made sense.
But and first, Sugar Ray and Uncle Cracker and
all those guys did that. And we were just did a last summer. We were out. Us and the Wallflowers were out. That was a good tour. And we always kind of rank the different. You know, who do we have more fun with? but we'll leave that for off camera.
And so you also have a charity foundation that you guys have been a part of for a number of years. I want to touch on that. You raising money for, what's the charity for? For kids?
So post-Katrina, New Orleans, obviously.
Hurricane Katrina.
We wanted to find a way where we could really give back. And so, you know, we had some celebrity there, and we found that it was real easy for people to get on board with us. Initially, we were helping first responders, and we worked with Make It Right.
Habitat for Humanity, rebuilding homes and stuff.
And we did some things with the Audubon Zoo and firefighters, but we wanted to find a way where we really felt like we could make a difference. So we're running after-school programs for underprivileged kids. We started at Bethune Elementary in New Orleans, and we're looking to expand that. So it feels very worthwhile. We have 120 kids who really actually depend on us now.
We've rebuilt playgrounds, done splash parks, The after school music program, rebuild the teachers' lounge at Bethune Elementary. A couple times a year, a truck pulls up and gives
supplies,
crayons and construction paper, scissors, all the things that most kids in schools take for granted. They don't have, and it's amazing. But you know, that's been going on. This will be the 17th year.
Yeah, we're in it thick now.
And right? Now, you know, we've got a board of directors and a full-time executive director, and it's become certainly bigger than the sum of its parts.
Yeah. We hold two or three events every year now.
We get to just show up and play for the fundraisers, and now there's people really taking an ownership to it and do amazing things. Mm.
And everybody in Louisiana, they've recovered from Katrina, or is there still...
I don't know if everybody, certainly New Orleans, seems like it's on the right path. I think... If you talk to some people, they would say no. I mean, if indications that there are more restaurants and bars in New Orleans now than there were pre-Katrina, I mean, I guess if you look at it that way, it seems like it's doing okay.
Mm-hmm. You know, exactly. There are people who probably had a terrible experience and can cite, you know, how they'll never be the same. And so many people just left the city.
Yeah.
You know, I did. You know, we were like, let's you know... Let's move.
First time the band didn't live in the same city.
Yeah. A lot like Detroit when it, you know, had its bankruptcy and stuff and things got really bad. Post Katrina, New Orleans was really bad, but entrepreneurs and people saw opportunity. So young people, tech started coming into the city, cheap, amazing real estate. You know, New Orleans is one of the most beautiful, magical cities in the country. So that has been one of the silver linings in the tragedy of Katrina.
And it's BTE Foundation.
BTEFoundation.org. Go donate. We have an online auction that's always going. And we always need help. And we always have events. Mm-hmm. We have the tailgate.
Tailgate's October 8th before Monday Night Football. Saints and Redskins.
Ooh. I mean, come down. I mean, it's a blast. You hang out with us. You have some great jambalaya, mm-hmm. some couchon de lait, some boudin.
Woo.
And you get a little better than Ezra Action. And we a lot of times we have the 6'10 Stompers who perform with us. Do you know who
they're
the 6'10?
No.
They're with us for that. They were in the Macy's Thanksgiving
Day Parade. So about 150 dudes with dad bods and pot bellies and stuff. They started.
I'm in.
they do synchronized dance routines, and it's they wear old polyester coaching shorts and
red
knee
shorts,
high
or blue shorts,
you know, tube socks, you know, and head sweatbands,
red
and
satin jacket.
And they started in New Orleans. They started doing Mardi Gras parades, but now like Jim said, it's Macy's Day Parade. All the you know, the Rose Bowl and stuff, and they will be performing.
And I remember when they first appeared on the Macy's parade, the announcers went, "What?
That's New Orleans, baby."
Yeah. Yeah, so it's a great time. So go to btefoundation.org, check it out, and get involved.
It's going to be at Manning's as well. So,
which is the Manning brothers, Eli and Peyton.
And Archie.
You know, being from New Orleans, it's great. The city really supports and embraces its own. And because of that, you know, we have so many fans and so much warmth in that city. But also, like, the Mannings, Coach Peyton, you know, the sports teams and stuff, we've become really close with them. And so when we do our events, you know, like the tailgate, you're going to see some Saints there.
Yeah,
you're going to see some...
Community spirit.
Yeah, you'll see Anthony. Hopefully Anthony Davis will be there, you know, being a roadie that day or something. You just never know.
All right. Better Than Ezra are here. Would you do another song for us?
Yeah, we're
going to do it. Should we do Desperately Warning? You want to do Desperately Warning?
Yeah.
Okay. Pass the road to your house where you never call home, where they turned out your lights, though they say you'll never know. I remember running through the wet grass, falling to sit behind, both of us never tiring, desperately wanting. When they pumped out your guts, filled you full of those pills, you were never quite right, disturbing all the chills. Said the worst is over,
Voice of America.
Thank you,
thank
world.
You,
thank you, world.
Yeah, right.
There you
thank
go.
You, thank
world.
So, you guys, where can we get the new album?
The new album will be everywhere.
Everywhere.
Retail, vinyl, CD, but you know,
we
streaming
gotta finish it first.
Streaming and stuff.
2019, you said?
2019, new album. The new single's out right now. It's out on BMG, which is a worldwide conglomerate, Evil Empire Corporation.
And on your website, I'm sure people
on the website betterthanezra.com, you could check it out. And again, BTE Foundation
and the re-release of Deluxe.
That's right
Pledge vinyl. Get your vinyl on.
So when you put the 10th album out, please come back.
Absolutely. Oh brother,
to have you back.
We would love to be back. And
thank
continued
you, thank
success
you.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you so much. Is Better Than Ezra right here on the Voice of America. You're watching Border Crossing.
Border Crossings on VOA 1.
Hi, I'm Larry London. Welcome to Border Crossings. They're on the road right now for a brand new album called Megaplex. We'd like to welcome We Are Scientists to the Voice of America. It's great to have you guys here.
Great to be here.
Are you We Are Scientists? I mean, are you scientists? I'm sure that's the most redundant question you get asked, probably have been asked in the number of years you've been putting out albums, but I have to ask it.
Yeah. The more we get asked it, the more I begin to really wonder.
Yeah, that's one of those
initially,
things.
Yeah, initially I would just brush it off. No, no, it's simply a name.
Yeah.
But the more I ponder it,
it's like if somebody...
The more esoteric it becomes.
If you're repeatedly called a jerk.
Uh-oh, you start to believe.
Even if you don't think you are, at some point you got to say, like, maybe I am kind of a jerk.
But what if your name were Larry Jerk?
Uh-oh. And you wouldn't
true.
Be hosting this show.
Sure.
No, I never be.
It's a different Larry. I got
different
you.
Larry.
Got me went to school.
So let me ask you this. Why did you pick the name We Are Scientists?
We're tremendously enthusiastic about science.
You ran out of other options.
We actually were asked by a guy at a U-Haul company when we were returning a moving van out of college if we were scientists. The two of us at the time both wore glasses, and
yeah, based on our
we hadn't learned about contacts.
It's funny that that was the most legitimate version of that query.
Yeah.
That was the one most purely based on someone's just pure suspicion that we might be scientists.
We hadn't misled him by proclaiming that we were scientists.
And originally you're from Berkeley, California?
No, we lived in Berkeley, and that's where we formed the band. But
okay.
We only spent about 3 months there as a band.
Okay, and where are you from originally?
I'm from Utah. He's from Florida, and the man down there is from Jersey.
That's right.
And so you were in school, or what brought you to Berkeley, California?
Yeah, Keith and I met each other actually in Los Angeles, and then after we graduated, moved to Berkeley.
Ah, and you said we're going to make a band. This just felt right. You became friends, and
we had a basement,
basically. Yeah, we sort of reverse engineered the whole thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The house we moved into in Berkeley had a basement, and there were three of us. We said, well, What are some nice things three men can do in a dark basement?
Yeah, what's a wholesome activity?
Yeah.
And you weren't called We Are Scientists at that time when you first started, were you?
We actually had the band name before we had
a group.
Maybe even before we had the basement.
We got that question from the guy at the U-Haul, and we said, you know, minutes later as we were driving away in our personal vehicle, we're like, that would be a pretty good band name. We should probably start that band. And then I think it was a couple months later, after incidentally we had come up with a list of song names, that we actually had a practice in that basement and started the long, fraught road.
Yeah. Now, what are your names? Because I know you've got many names. I looked at your bio, and you go by many, many names.
Sure. Yeah.
So maybe you can give us the birth name first.
What our parents call
us. Yeah.
What are your parents
call us?
Chris?
I'm Keith.
My name is also Keith.
Also Keith. And now the stage names, which are? You have a list of them.
Lately, I've gone by Turbo.
Turbo.
Stage, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Larry Jerk.
Larry Jerk.
And they just call me Phoenix.
Phoenix, all right. So why the other names? I mean, it's just out of boredom, or are you just...
Keeps the fans off our trails. We used to get a lot of personal visits at our homes. And this at least adds one additional hurdle to the doxing process.
So how many albums has it been now? You guys have been together for, 5 years, I guess, I read?
This is our... Megaplex is our sixth album.
In 5 years?
No, in 10.
10
no,
years?
15.
15? Well, it's just kid multiplying.
The first one came out in 2005.
Uh-huh.
So.
Wow, well, congratulations. What's been the key to your success? I mean, to make something...
Longevity.
Yes, that's a good answer. Yeah. But what gives you longevity after 15 years? Because many bands are trying to make it past the first year, and you get 15 years is a long time.
I think the core of it is kind of our friendship. You know, we were best friends before we started the band. And I think as soon as that expires, the band will end.
Mm-hmm. Uh-oh. Yeah,
I think,
pressure.
I think probably a lot of friends have been doing, you know, jigsaw puzzles together for 18 years.
Right.
Or playing cards.
Yeah, whatever. So this is simply an activity like that for us.
Well, great, great. We're happy to have you in our studios. We Are Scientists are here. And would you do a song for us?
Of course.
Sure. Of course.
What's this one called?
Should we do One In, One Out first?
Yeah.
This is the first track off of Megaplex.
All right.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4.
I fall in love at least once every night. Another volume just keeps catching my eye. I can't keep picking one off every shelf. I made a promise, it's one in and one out. That's why I stopped right where I stood when I saw you. That's why I stopped right where I stood when I saw you. I'm breaking myself trying to get you in bed. A million thoughts are racing around my head. You know, but I'm gripped by this doubt. Hold on this promise, it's one in and one out. That's why I stopped right where I stood when I saw you. That's why I stopped right where I stood when I saw you. There was a lot I could have done, nothing good. That's why I stopped right where I stood when I saw you. Saw you. There was a lot
nothing good. That's why I stopped right where I stood when I saw you.
A scientist live on Border Crossings on the Voice of America. You guys sound great. I like the harmonies. And so the songwriting, is it a collaborative thing? Is it there's one person does the songwriting? How does it work for you? What's the process?
It's yeah, it always kind of starts with one person, the initial kernel of an idea, and then we work on stuff as a band once things are a little bit set in stone, really. No, once they're kind of past the demo phase and we've agreed that that the song merits our attention as a band. But yeah.
And how has your music evolved from the first album to Megaplex, which, I mean, it's
gotten worse.
50, it's gotten worse.
our first album, I think, sounds a lot like a lot of the music in New York in 2005. The sort of disco rock that was very popular then, Strokes and the Yeah Yeah Yeahs and bands like that, who were all sort of bands we were listening to and very excited about. And you can hear that very actively in that record.
We sort of also used to write our songs with an eye purely toward the live performance. And so we'd write our songs to be played, and then we would, when it came time to record the album, we would be like, well, how do we best capture three guys playing in a room? And now it's I would say it's sort of flipped. Like we definitely write our songs for an album, and then we worry later aggressively about how to do it live. Yeah,
that's very interesting. I mean, and so where do you get the influences for the songs that you're writing? Is it your life experience? Is it observing things? I mean, has it come from places you visited? Where do you find your best songs come from?
No, that's a good question. There's a lot of channeling going on, I would say. There's I often find that, like, when I'm writing a song, that I kind of figure out what the song is about as it's going. Like, I very rarely begin with anything more than, like, maybe a phrase or I never think of a story before I sit down and write. Like, it sort of is always coupled with the music and the melody and sort of the syllables initially lending themselves to words that, you know, that I kind of free associate into meaning eventually.
Where's the most unusual place you ever got influence for a song? I mean, you never thought of it and you started, wow, and then it became something.
Yeah. We definitely wrote one song on our second record because we wanted a Hall & Oates style blue-eyed soul song and some honking saxophone.
Wow.
That was how that song started.
Yeah.
The saxophone on it doesn't really honk, unfortunately.
it's too smooth to be considered a honking.
The live show differ from the acoustic set we're seeing? I mean,
we lie down flat on the ground.
Okay, that's important. That always gets the crowd going.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, the live show is, you know, it's all electric guitars, fair amount of distortion and effects.
Yeah, it's much more kinetic.
A full drum kit and, yeah, a little more bouncing around.
So what format lane would we see We Are Scientists in most likely? Is it alternative?
Rock. I mean, we're kind of, this record has probably only about 30% of it is straight rock.
Yeah.
And then it's kind of pop, I guess. But probably the majority of our songs, like 80%, would be called rock songs.
I mean, I would say if there are any radio programmers listening, we plug nicely into any format.
Any format. Work between any two records.
That's a very weird thing about us. Yeah.
So Megaplex is an interesting name for an album. What made you decide this is what you're going to call the album?
Well, it definitely stems from our love of movies, and specifically going to the picture house.
Oftentimes, it's more simply about attending that cathedral than the Megaplex.
Exactly.
That it is the sermon itself.
Yeah, the sermon is irrelevant.
So it's not a concept album. I mean,
it's not a concept album. We did, you know, we thought that title fit this collection of songs quite well because there's an eclecticism to them that is. I think it's more eclectic than our previous albums, and you know, as Keith was saying, there's kind of quite a variety of formats, mm-hmm. if you will. And so in the same way that a megaplex might offer, you know, 10 different movies for 10 different tastes, this album kind of has a little bit of something for, well, not everyone, but I'd say 98% of the world would find their favorite song in here. I mean,
well, you know, you guys have obviously lasted a long time. 15 years is a lifetime in the music business, and you're all very young. So I'm sure you have, and this is the new album, but I'm sure you have ideas for the future as well. And so the rest of the year is going to be touring. Is that kind of what you're on the track for
Pretty
now?
Pretty much, yeah, through mid-November.
Is this an international tour?
We go back and forth to Europe kind of constantly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're off to Italy tomorrow, actually.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, you guys are huge.
For the weekend.
All around the world. I was looking at Australia and different places on, you know, on the planet.
China has not discovered we are scientists yet.
Well, they will today.
Yeah.
They will today.
Great.
After this. And you guys, I don't know if what I read is correct, if it's accurate, but you're kind of bad boys. So you caused a problem in a hotel. That's what I came across somewhere.
That was not us.
Was this not you?
Was this the shredding of
yes.
the Bible?
Yes, the shredding of
Austria?
The Bible.
Yeah. That was actually
that was somebody
that
else.
Was our tour
it was our tour manager.
Oh, yeah. Your tour manager, who's yeah. no longer your tour manager.
He is.
He's outside. We wouldn't let him in here.
He's out there on the DC Mall right now.
Shredding Bibles.
He's probably lying face down with cuffs on his right. on his wrists, I would guess. Yeah, he's definitely the bad boy in the band.
Yeah,
ironically.
Definitely. Yeah, the rest of us are all very polite.
Yeah.
If it wasn't music, what would you be doing? What were you studying or thinking of studying when you came across one another and decided to make a band?
I studied international relations, so I probably would have been let go from the diplomatic corps this year.
What about you? I was working in film production.
Uh-huh. So, and you?
I was working in public radio.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, at WNYC in New York.
Okay.
Until these guys drafted me.
Rescued
you. So we got him out of a real dead end.
Right, broadcasting. You had another guy in the band. I think it was a fourth guy who left a couple years ago.
Our fourth man, Max Hart, actually, he was our keyboardist on mm-hmm. our second record, and he has come back to produce our last two records. So he produced Megaplex.
Oh, that's excellent.
He actually is a touring key player for Melissa Etheridge now, because mm-hmm. we trained him.
That's right.
And now she's benefiting from that training.
Yeah, chops yeah. rating, yeah.
It's all your investments.
Yeah.
We Are Scientists are a guest here. Megaplex is the new album. Would you guys do another song for us?
Sure.
Yeah.
This is also from Megaplex. It's called Your Light Has Changed.
One, two, three, four. However you get in, that's how you leave again. But once you're in my head, I wanna keep you there, and that's why I lie awake every night while I wait for your light to change. It seems so distant, I can't see the end. Oh, why my head is spinning like a ceiling fan while I wait for your light to change. I might think this is it, somehow we're on the brink. Just when I'm gonna quit, that's when it's kicking in. And that's why I lie awake every night while I wait for your light to change. It seems so distant, I can't see the end. Oh, why my head is spinning like a ceiling fan while I wait for your light. However you get in, you're always creeping in. And once you're in my head, I wanna keep you there. And that's why I lie awake every night while I wait for your light to change. It seems so distant, I can't see the end. Oh, while my head is spinning like a ceiling fan while I wait for your light to change.
We are scientists, and it's Border Crossings. And so, what's been the highlight for you guys so far? I mean, that's 15 years of work. There's a lot of stories, a lot of road trips. What's been the most memorable moment for We Are Scientists?
Let's see. We've had some wild experiences.
I'm sure you guys have. I want to hear about it.
Keith and I just had a pretty wild boat ride on Lake Garda.
Oh, yeah, that was great.
Italy. Really?
Yeah. Yeah, touring is basically going back and forth between periods of complete inactivity and complete overactivity. Mm. So in one of those moments of complete inactivity, we decided to take advantage of our location, our proximity to Lake Garda. And,
Chris was visiting family in Germany, and we figured we'd balance that domesticity with unhinged boat captaining.
That's right.
That's great. And so the tour, I mean, I'm sure there's been, you know, you play around the world, so the fans are different everywhere you go because you can't take your U.S. fans with you. True. So what's the reception been like when you leave the country? What kind of people come out to watch the band perform?
It's always better than in the U.S.
Is it really? Okay, yeah, right, sure. I'm sure your U.S. fans will love hearing that.
They should work harder. Being dishonest with them is not going to help. I mean, we need to tell them the reality. The biggest difference is usually the size of the show. It's just more, you know, I think more exciting as a person in an audience if you're crammed in amongst a bunch of other attendees. So our UK shows are always the biggest. So they tend to get the most riled up.
Yeah. That's your favorite place to play is the UK?
Yeah, I didn't say that.
How about Japan? Have you been there?
Japan is amazing. We've only been a couple times, but it's fantastic. It's kind of one of the only places that we go where we feel genuinely the possibility of getting lost when we're walking around because there's not much signage in English.
Right.
And
I live there, so I know.
Right.
Yeah, so. And that...